Yeah, I'm delighted it went down so well. You know, I'm just a bit worried about next week. The only way is down after the reaction last night, but it was brilliant that everyone enjoyed it.
But it just shows you, I suppose, how much that team, like people talk about their memories of Euro 88 and Italian 90, just how much that Jack Charlton team means to people.
Yeah, I think it's the team, but I think it's kind of people looking at their own lives from the remove of 30 years and what felt like, I suppose, really positive and almost carefree times after the terrible 80s. Then people kind of really enjoyed themselves for those years. And so it's kind of remembering back to that. So who wouldn't enjoy that, I suppose?
So take us back to the start, Ross. I mean, how did you get involved with the project and why did you pick this project, I guess?
Yeah, well, in the case of this one, I was kind of the director that was brought in by Loose Horse Productions. They're one of the top production companies in Ireland. And then Cull McCallaghan and RT was the commissioning editor. Good Cork man, actually. I was offered the opportunity to do it. And it's just the kind of thing you love to do. You know, you kind of think this is kind of the apex of getting to do this job. I think everyone who's into sport would love to be making this documentary about the Italian 90 and so on. So I jumped at the chance. And then it's just a case of wading into all the archive. Lining up all the interviews with the team, with our team, lining it up with Jack's team, and kind of taking it from there. And you just kind of work at it little by little. But the archive of that time, I mean, it's just incredible. We only scratched the surface for what you can fit into 2 hours. But I suppose they were probably the most documented team in Irish history. And back then, you could actually get close to the teams. So, you know, the cameras got a bit closer. The journalists used to travel with them. Even the fans used to stay in the same hotels. It's not in the documentary, but John Aldridge talks about, you know, waking up the morning after games and finding me 3 or 4 fans asleep on this hotel room floor, like, you know. So it's very different times, and I suppose that's one of the reasons why people enjoy looking back at it so much.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Even like hearing George Hamilton come down a phone line brought back vivid memories to me.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, just something about that kind of strange commentary coming down a phone line that's really evocative, actually. And you kind of almost, you know, hanker back to those days a little bit because, I don't know, there's just something about it that feels... Everything was harder got back then or something. Do you know what I mean? Now the sport is on 24 hours a day, whereas then, like, a big sporting moment was kind of watched by everyone and just felt a little bit more special, maybe.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what it comes down to, because back then, I mean, like, it was the only show in town, whereas now, like, the Euros or the World Cup rolls around and you're like, oh God, more football. Whereas back then it was like, oh great, 3 solid weeks of football.
Yeah, it is very different. You would look forward to it, and it's true now, because I think those tournaments now, they probably have been belittled a bit, like by the Champions League, where you get to see all those players kind of week in, week out, and sometimes playing with better players around them. It's still fascinating, obviously, to see how the countries come together and who's going to kind of line up and end up taking the trophy. But yeah, I think it's been diminished by probably just how brilliant the Champions League is, which we were thankful for as well, I suppose. But yeah, those times definitely feel very different to now, and I think the players are very different, you know. It's funny meeting all those guys from Jack's era. Like, they live much more interesting lives in a way. And a lot of these guys, it was kind of their second time around or their second chance. Guys like Townsend and Cascarino, they kind of came to professional football late. Whereas it feels like, I suppose, the sports people or the soccer players of today, they're kind of discovered when they're 7 years old and their whole life was lived in a bubble. Whereas these guys, their lives were the opposite of that, and it was probably better for them in the long run.
Yeah, even quote-unquote, the English guys in that Irish team, you could see how much playing for Ireland meant to them and playing for Jack meant to them.
Yeah, and actually it's a really interesting thing that we go into a lot more in episode 2 is, you know, that a lot of these guys, they actually had opportunities to play for England. Several of the guys who were English-born who ended up playing for Ireland turned down the opportunity to play for England or to come into a squad because they always felt that Irish connection. And you imagine yourself, you know, a lot of people listen to this, if they were to move away and then had a child and that child wanted to play for Ireland, it wouldn't seem strange at all. But it was a funny kind of controversy or debate at the time about how many players Jack was bringing in that were second or third generation Ireland Irish. And the granny rule became, you know, part of the lexicon, you know, as something that everyone immediately knew what you were talking about. But those guys were as proud to play for Ireland as anyone that was born in Ireland. And we were lucky to have them, and in a way we didn't deserve them, because a lot of their family members had left Ireland not wanting to, just looking for opportunities elsewhere.
Ross, for you, I mean, how daunting a project was it personally, because this Irish team, it's kind of almost descended into myth at this point?
Yeah, it's kind of you feel like you have a lot of responsibility doing a documentary like this, and it felt a lot like I did one with Katie Taylor, as you probably know, and recently with Shane Lowry, which was a great opportunity to do. And you're kind of dealing with subjects that are very close to people's hearts, so you feel like a lot of responsibility, and it's actually quite nerve wracking when they're going out on television because you're just thinking, oh God, I hope people won't be disappointed, you know. So it is a responsibility, but like it's also a pleasure. You feel very privileged to be able to tell these kinds of stories, you know. So I'm not sure how many more of them there are out there that people really feel that connection to. Probably down there, everyone wants to see the double done.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's a great book recently, obviously, as well. Done on it, but yeah, those moments actually, you know, Katie, Shane Lowry, Within the Open, Italian 90, there were moments that brought the whole country together. So it really is a privilege to get to look at them and try and present them to the public in a way that they'll enjoy.
Now, it's something the documentary makes a big issue of, or I suppose talks a lot about in depth, is where Ireland was as a country before Jack Charlton took over, and how, I suppose, the people's perception of Ireland changed with the fortunes of the football team.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of, in a funny way, I don't want to spend too long on it because it's almost become a cliche, the 80s, you know, like the 80s, emigration. What are the things we always remember, like the church, emigration, recession? I mean, those are the words that were on everyone's tongue the whole time. And I was a kid growing up in the 80s, but I remember it so clearly of just the sense of not all-out depression. People still knew how to have a good time and there were still great moments. But like, I always think, like, I remember Bruce Springsteen playing in Slane and that just being this like massive thing that Bruce Springsteen would come to Slane, you know, and because no one came to Ireland back then, do you know what I mean? So the 80s obviously wasn't a great time in Irish history, and everyone knows that. We don't want to spend too long talking about it, but it just feel like around those early 90s was the pivotal time in Irish history when things started to change and things started to improve, and people in Ireland started to maybe have a little bit more confidence in their standing internationally, you know, that our fans are going out there to these tournaments and being loved, you know, and we loved being loved. So I think, you know, there definitely was an element of Ireland was changing, and I certainly think that the football team fed into it. It may not have been the only factor, you know, there's a lot of things going on. It just felt to me a little bit like these dominoes, you know. I mentioned it somewhere else, you've Mary Robinson becoming president, like that felt like, you know, a woman being president of Ireland, like we'd never seen it before, and now it's become quite a normal thing with Mary McAleese as well. But these were little changes that were happening, and I think it's said to people like that Ireland can change, it doesn't always have to be the way it has been, and I think Irish people have really run with that pretty much ever since.
Yeah, certainly so. And just looking at the documentary last night, one of the moments that really stood out to me as a massive turning point was, I suppose, that win over England in Euro 88.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you were watching at the time, I'm sure you were, but like, I don't know how old you are, Rory, but like,
I was five
I remember
then.
It very vividly, but yeah, I mean, because my memory going into that and asking some of the people that were contributing to the documentary was just all out fear. I mean, because the English players, because we watched English football a lot in Ireland, you know, guys like Brian Robson and John Barnes and Peter Beardsley, I mean, these guys were doing incredible things for their club teams. And England were always at every tournament, and we hadn't been. So, you know, at the time, it just felt like such a fearful thing to be going into. But then when we won, it, the funny thing looking back at some of those games is actually how good we were. And I think I was so filled with anxiety watching those matches that I didn't realise that the team were as good as they were. And particularly looking back at some of the stuff in those tournaments, 88, 90 and 94. I mean, in 94 against Italy, Ireland were superb. Now, I think that game almost killed them because they probably ran themselves into the ground and then celebrated after. But yeah, you know, I think that game against England in 88 was the start of something. And the thing was that we could actually compete with anyone in the world, and we actually had brilliant players. Mm-hmm. They just hadn't been, I suppose, never had the luck or the opportunity or the level of performance to get to a tournament like that. But once they got there, they showed that they could compete with anyone.
Even the guys in the documentary were saying, like, the Euros are the Euros, but the World Cup is where they wanted to be. They got there in Italia 90, and that seems like a watershed moment for that team, for the country. And I think everyone remembers where they were when Packy, like, pulled off that save against Romania, David Lillery scored the penalty.
Yeah, and I think the thing about Italian 90 compared to Euro 88, I mean, Euro 88, I think Ireland's participation in it only lasted 7 or 8 days. You know, it was three matches essentially in a week or a little bit more, whereas Italian 90, by the time you get through the three group matches and then you have a round of 16 match against Romania and then you go to the Italian match, and I don't know if you saw the Diego Maradona documentary, but the next match would have been against Argentina and Naples, and you know, we're only one game away from that. Like, it's incredible to think. I don't know if anyone in Ireland ever thought we'd get to the semi-final, but really, we were 90 minutes away from being in the last four in the world. I mean, that was just an incredible tournament for everyone watching. But because it lasted so long, I think people had already started getting on this kind of really positive bandwagon from Euro 88. But when we got to Italian 90, because our participation in it continued past the group stage and then the quarterfinal and then going to the Pope, and we were watching it every day on the news, everyone was tuned in, you know. And it was also a different time when we had fewer distractions in terms of other things to watch, or you know again, cliches, but mobile phones and the internet and all sorts. The whole country was focused on one thing, and it was a really positive thing, and it just, I suppose, everyone who was alive for it will just remember the spirit that was around the country at the time.
I think everyone remembers the great moments, as I mentioned, like Paddy saved, David Leary scoring, Kevin Sheedy, even Toto Scarlacci's goal, we all remembered that. But looking back on it now, if you watched matches from start to finish, they were pretty poor affairs.
They were. Well, I think, you know, Ireland's style probably wasn't brilliant to watch. But even within that, like, you know, there were moments of real quality, and we did create some great chances at the time. I mean, not too many against Italy, but in some of the other games, like, you know, I was just actually, we're in the edit now for the second episode, and I was just watching the England-Ireland game in Wembley for the 92 qualifiers, where we absolutely murdered them, basically. Do you know what I mean? It was, and we had so many great chances in that game. So, unfortunately, you know, watching the long ball game or playing down the kind of in behind the fullbacks wasn't brilliant to watch. But like, when we actually did get the ball down and played a bit, we had great players like Ray Howden, fantastic player, Ronnie Whelan, Kevin Sheedy, like, they were great players. And going into 94, you know, then when we had Roy Keane, you know, Roy Keane, Andy Townsend and John Sheridan in midfield against Italy absolutely bossed the game. Italians can't get near the ball in midfield. So, like, you know, at times, you know, it wasn't brilliant to watch, but we did have really good players, and I think when they had a chance to play, they definitely did. So it's easy to kind of write it off as terrible football, but there was definitely times where you could see the quality.
Yeah, you certainly could indeed. That homecoming in Italian 90 was something else, wasn't it? It was mental.
It's just amazing. No one was killed, really. But I mean, just people, it's almost like people are crawling along underneath the bus, trying to, you know, get run over. It's incredible to see just kids running alongside the bus and like, just, I don't know, like, you just can't even see the streets for so many people being on them. I mean, it's such a special moment, and so wonderful to be able to kind of relive that archive. You know, that's a great thing about the sort of these anniversaries of Italian 90, but also it's the 25th anniversary of the Lansdowne riots as well, funny enough, which is where this project started, with a conversation around that, actually. But yeah, I mean, that archive from the homecoming in Italian 90 is just astonishing, isn't it? And it's just brilliant to see the country kind of so together and so enjoying themselves at that moment.
Certainly. So what can we expect, I suppose, Ross, in part two next Monday night?
Part two is an interesting one because, you know, unfortunately, we have to deal with the end of the Charlton era, you know, and Tony Cascarino says a thing in his book, which is, you know, nothing in football ever ends well. And unfortunately, it's the same often in sport, unless you're Brian O'Driscoll finishing off with a Grand Slam. But, you know, most sports stories end badly. And unfortunately, in the case of that era, after USA 94, it was kind of downhill, wasn't it? But it's a different kind of feel to episode one. I think we explore a little bit more of the kind of English-Irish relationship and the background of some of the players, and we enjoy USA 94, and then we kind of look at what happened after that. But it's a slightly different kind of documentary than just the all-out kind of fun of episode one to a certain degree, but I think it's worth watching nonetheless.
And what's next for you now? You mentioned the 1990 double would be a good one.
I think someone from Cork should make that one, but that is a great story, and I remember that one very well as well. All the lads up in, because I'm from Dublin, but like, I remember sitting outside a pub in Dublin, surrounded by Cork friends just telling me how like how amazing it was and what a great moment it was and how great Cork is and not being able to argue with them basically, you know. But I actually don't really know what I'm going to do next. Yeah, you know, it's been full on the last 6 or 7 months with this and doing the doc with Shane Lowry as well. So I'll probably end up. I'm sure we all might end up quarantined pretty soon anyway. So we'll just get this one finished now in the next couple of days and we'll see what happens after that.
Ross, been a pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on the documentary. I absolutely loved it.
Thanks, me and Rory. Appreciate it.